4. Cal could hear the footsteps, first one set and then two and then three. Or maybe the third was just the pumping of his heart as he raced through the alleys and side streets. He didn't stop, didn't breathe, not until he reached the ruby fields. Fauna met his gaze as he passed within, her grey brow furrowing. He almost never came by the front door, but she didn't stop him, didn't ask. The footsteps had fallen away a few blocks back, but he still checked the markings on the stairs as he climbed toward the room at the top, and on the room's door, charms bound to the building itself, to wood and stone, designed to keep the room hidden from all eyes but his. Kel shut the door and sagged back against the wood as candles flickered to life around the narrow room. He'd been set up, but by who? And for what? He wasn't sure he wanted to know, but he needed to, and so he dragged the stolen parcel from his pocket. It was wrapped in a swatch of faded grey fabric, and when he unfolded the cloth, a rough-cut stone tumbled out into his palm. It was small enough to nest in a closed fist and as black as Kel's right eye, and it sang in his hand. A low, deep vibration that called on his own power like a tuning fork. Like to like, resonating, amplifying. His pulse quickened. Part of him wanted to drop the stone, the other part wanted to grip it tighter. When Kel held it up to the candlelight, he saw that one side was jagged as if broken, but the other was smooth, and on that smooth face a symbol glowed faintly. Kel's heart lurched when he saw it. He'd never seen the stone before, but he recognized the mark. It was written in a language few could speak and fewer still could use, a language that ran through his veins with his blood and pulsed in his black eye, a language he had come to think of simply as Antari. But the language of magic hadn't always belonged to Antari alone. No, there were stories of a time when others could speak directly to magic, even if they couldn't command it by blood. Of a world so bonded to power that every man, woman and child became fluent in its tongue. Black London. The language of magic had belonged to them. But after the city fell, every relic had been destroyed. Every remnant in every world forcibly erased as part of a cleansing, a purge. A way to ward against the plague of power that had devoured it. That was the reason there were no books written in Antari. What few texts existed now were piecemeal, the spells collected and transcribed phonetically and passed down, the original language eradicated. It made him shiver now to see it drawn as it was meant to be, not in letters, but in rune, the only rune he knew. Kel possessed a single book on Antari tongue, entrusted to him by his tutor Tiran. It was a leather journal filled with blood commands, spells that summoned light or darkness, encouraged growth, broke enchantments. All of them sounded out and explained. But on its cover, there was a symbol. "What does it mean?" he'd asked the tutor. "It's a word," explained Tiran. "One that belongs to every world and none. It is the word for magic. It refers to its existence and its creation." Tiran brought a finger to the rune. "If magic had a name, it would be this," he said, tracing the symbol's lines. "Vitari." Now Kel ran his thumb over the stone's rune, the word echoing in his head. "Vitari." Just then, footsteps fell on the stairs and Kel stiffened. No one should be able to see those stairs, let alone use them, but he could hear the boots. How had they followed him here? And that's when Kel saw the pattern on the swatch of pale fabric that had once been wrapped around the stone and now lay unfolded on his bed. There were symbols scrawled across it. A tracing spell. Sanct. Cal shoved the stone in his pocket and lunged for the window as the small door behind him burst open violently. He mounted the sill and jumped out and down, hitting the street below hard and rolling to his feet as the intruders came crashing into his room. Someone had set him up. Someone wanted him to bring a forbidden relic out of White London and into his city. A figure leaped through the window in his wake, and Cal spun to face the shadows on his heels. He expected two of them, but found only one. The hooded stranger slowed and stopped.
"Who are you?"
demanded Cal. The shadow didn't answer him. It strode forward, reaching for the weapon at its hip, and in the low alley light, Cal saw an X scarred the back of his hand, the mark of cutthroats and traitors, a knife for hire. But when the man drew his weapon, Cal froze. It was no rusted dagger, but a gleaming half-sword, and he knew the sigil on its hilt. The chalice and rising sun, the symbol of the royal family. It was the blade wielded by members of the royal guard, and only by them.
"Where did you get that?"
growled Cal, anger rolling through him. The cutthroat flexed his fingers around his half-sword. It began to glow dully, and Cal tensed. The swords of the royal guards weren't just beautiful or sharp. They were enchanted. Cal himself had helped create the spellwork that ran through the metal, spellwork that dampened a magician's power with only one cut. The blades were designed to put a stop to conflicts before they began, to remove the threat of magical retaliation. Because of their potential, and the fear of that potential in the wrong hands, the royal guards were told to keep the blade on them at all times. If one of them had lost their sword, they'd likely lost their life as well.
"Saranac!" said the cutthroat.
"Surrender." The command caught Cal by surprise. Knives for hire took loot and blood, not prisoners.
"Put down that sword," ordered Cal.
He tried to will the weapon from the cutthroat's grip, but it was warded. Another failsafe to keep the blade from falling into the wrong hands, which it already had. Cal swore and drew his own knife from its holster. It was a good foot shorter than the royal blade.
"Surrender,"
said the cutthroat again, his voice strangely even. He tilted up his chin, and Cal caught a glimmer of magic in the man's eyes. A compulsion spell. Cal had only a moment to note the use of forbidden magic before the man lunged, the glowing weapon slicing through the air toward him. He jerked back, dodging the sword, as a second figure appeared at the other end of the alley.
"Surrender,"
said the second man.
"One at a time," snapped Cal.
He threw his hand into the air, and the street stones shuddered and then shot upward in a wall of rock and dirt, barring the second attacker's path. But the first kept coming, kept slashing, and Cal scrambled backward out of the sword's arc. He almost made it. The blade caught his arm, slicing through fabric but narrowly missing his skin. He lunged away as the weapon cut again, but this time it found flesh, slashing across his ribs. Pain tore through Kel's chest as blood welled and spilled down his stomach. The man pressed forward, and Cal retreated a step and tried to will the street stones to rise between them. They shuddered and laid still.
"Surrender,"
ordered the cutthroat in his too even tone. Cal pressed his hand to his shirt front, trying to stem the blood as he dodged another slice.
"No!"
He spun the dagger in his hand, took it by the tip, and threw as hard as he could. The blade found its mark and buried itself in the cutthroat's shoulder. But to Kel's horror, the man didn't drop his weapon. He kept coming. Pain didn't even register on his face as he pulled the knife free and cast it aside.
"Surrender the stone,"
he said, dead-eyed. Kel's hand closed protectively around the talisman in his pocket. It hummed against his palm, and Kell realized as he held it that even if he could give it away, which he couldn't, he wouldn't, not without knowing what it was for and who was after it. He didn't want to let it go. Couldn't bear the thought of parting with it. Which was absurd. And yet, something in him ached to keep it. The cutthroat came at him again. Kell tried to take another step back, but his shoulders met the makeshift barricade. There was nowhere to run. Darkness glittered in the cutthroat's eyes, and his blade sang through the air, and Kell threw out his empty hand and ordered, "Stop!" as if that would do a damned thing. And yet somehow it did. The word echoed through the alley, and between one reverberation and the next, the night changed around him. Time seemed to slow, and so did the cutthroat, and so did Kell, but the stone clutched in his hand surged to life. Kell's own magic had bled out through the wound across his ribs, but the stone sang with power, and thick black smoke poured between his fingers. It shot up Kell's arm and across his chest and down his outstretched hand and rushed forward through the air toward the cutthroat. When the smoke reached him, it did not strike him, did not force him off his feet. Instead, it twisted and coiled around the cutthroat's body, spreading over his legs, up his arms, around his chest. And everywhere it touched, as soon as it touched, it froze, catching the cutthroat between one stride and the next, one breath and the next. Time snapped back into motion, and Kell gasped, his pulse pounding in his ears and the stones singing in his grip. The stolen royal blade hung mid-slash, inches from his face. The cutthroat himself stood motionless, his coat caught mid-billow behind him. Through the sheet of shadowy ice or stone or whatever it was, Kell could see the cutthroat's stiff form, eyes open and empty. Not the blank gaze of the compelled, but the vacancy of the dead. Kell stared down at the stone still thrumming in his hand, at the glowing symbol on its face. Vitari. It is the word for magic. It refers to its existence and its creation. Could it also mean the act of creating? There was no blood command for create. The golden rule of magic said that it couldn't be created. The world was made of give and take, and magic could be strengthened and weakened, but it could not be manifested out of nothing. And yet, he reached out to touch the frozen man. Had the power somehow been summoned by his blood? But he hadn't given a blood command, hadn't done anything but say stop. The stone had done the rest. Which was impossible. Even with the strongest elemental magic, one had to focus on the form they wanted it to take. But Kell hadn't envisioned the frozen shell, which meant the stone didn't simply follow an order. It interpreted. It created. Was this the way magic had worked in Black London? Without walls, without rules, without anything but want and will? Kell forced himself to return the talisman to his pocket. His fingers didn't want to relinquish it. It took all his focus to let go, and the moment the stone slipped from his hand back into his coat, a dizzy chill ran through him, and the world rocked. He felt weak as well as wounded, drained. It isn't something for nothing after all, thought Kell, but it was still something. Something powerful. Something dangerous. He tried to straighten, but pain tore across his stomach and he groaned, slumping back against the alley wall. Without his power, he couldn't will the wound closed, couldn't even keep his own blood in his veins. He needed to catch his breath, needed to clear his mind, needed to think. But just then the stones at his back began to shake and he pushed off the wall an instant before it crumbled to reveal the second hooded figure.
"Surrender," said the man in the same even tone as his counterpart. Kell could not. He didn't trust the stone. Even as he itched to take hold of it again, didn't know how to control it, but neither could he surrender it. So Kell lunged forward, recovering his own knife from the ground, and when the man came at him, he buried it in his attacker's chest. For a second, Kell worried the man wouldn't go down, feared the compulsion would keep him on his feet as it had the other one. Kell forced the blade deep and wrenched it up through organ and bone. But at last the man's knees buckled. For one brief moment the compulsion broke and the light flooded back into his eyes. And then it was gone. It wasn't the first time Kell had killed someone, but he still felt ill as he pulled the knife free and the man crumpled dead at his feet. The alley swayed, and Kell clutched his stomach, fighting for breath as pain rolled through him. And then he heard another set of steps in the distance and forced himself upright. He stumbled past the bodies, the frozen and the fallen both, and ran.